Hello there, and you're very welcome to episode 7 of League of Ireland Lives with myself, Jamie Moore. Thank you very much for joining me, and we have a fantastic guest over the next hour or so. The whole podcast is dedicated to a chat with John Caulfield, of course, former Cork City player and manager. He's Cork's all-time appearance maker with over 450 games, joint top scorer of all time too, spent 15 years playing for the Rebel Army before turning to management and of course took over the club in 2013, led the club to a double in 2017, an FAI Cup in 2016, and of course those unbelievable battles with Dundalk as well in front of packed houses at Turner's Cross. And funnily enough, we're a year to the day, we're the 1st of May 2020 now. On the 1st of May 2019, John Caulfield left his role as Cork City manager kind of 14 or 15 games into last season. And by coincidence, we actually did the interview today, and John is able to reflect on that. And also, he's been very vocal about what he feels need to be done with the League of Ireland and, you know, how it can be exposed more to TV revenue and stuff like that. So this is a really interesting chat, kind of split between his views on what's going to happen to the league now with the virus and where it's going to move forward. And then about 20 minutes or so talking about his time as a player, and then about half an hour talking about his time as a manager and also plans for the future. So I hope you really enjoy this. If you're listening to this, you can also watch the full video on YouTube. Just search League of Ireland Lives John Caulfield and you'll find it. And again, I appreciate your support and any shares or retweets or positive feedback on the podcast as well. That'd be great ratings and reviews to try and get the podcast to as many people as possible. So let's get episode 7 of League of Ireland Lives going with this fascinating guy called John Caulfield. Now, I'm very happy to welcome John Caulfield to League of Ireland Lives. John, good morning. How are you?
Good, Jamie. Yeah, weather is a lot of sunshine, so we're able to get out and do a few walks. We're all quite happy, you know.
Yeah, before we speak about the league currently, John, and of course your career in it, where in the world are you and how's lockdown where you are?
Yeah, well, I live in West Cork, beautiful West Cork, which is down near Clonakilty. So I'm used to seeing a lot of green fields and stuff, so I'm not, you know, I suppose in the jungle of certain places where, you know, everyone's on top of each other. So there's plenty of obviously, the 2K limit, we all have to apply by that. But, you know, we could certainly walk more than that because there's plenty of green fields around. So, yeah, I've been living in West Cork for 35 years and it's a great place to be. And at the moment, with all the lockdown and restrictions, it's, you know, it's great because there's plenty of space, Jamie.
Yes, I have family in Bantry and in a little village called Durris, John. So I've been down that neck of the woods lots over the years as a kid. And you're right, there's lots of space, certainly, to be able to be out and about, which is nice. John, where we are at the league at the moment, and of course this time last year you would have still been a League of Ireland manager, and you know you would be trying to deal with these issues with Cork City. You've been now, I'm sure, reading the papers and watching the news and listening to podcasts and stuff, and there's lots of debate about what's going to happen with behind closed doors and if the league will be back at all this year, and what's going to happen financially with, you know, TV broadcasts and streaming. What's your thoughts on what you've been reading and seeing?
Yeah, I suppose there's lots of discussions at the moment and lots of guessing, Jamie. I suppose the big thing is that we're still in a serious situation, you know, even over the road from me here. You know, 9 people died in a local hospital there in the last week. So, you know, the tragic circumstances. So we're still, you know, it's still very, you know, still very serious. And regarding football, it's just hard to see when we're going to restart. And I think if hypothetically taking away the scenario, and that if things do improve, which we hope they will, you know, regarding streaming and playing matches behind closed doors, while there's been a lot of talk, and I can see, you know, why a lot of clubs would want that, because obviously professional players, and if I was a manager, of course you'd want, you know, if there was any option of playing matches and it was to be behind closed doors, you would welcome that. However, I think if you look at it from a financial point of view, because ultimately in our league here, we don't have the backing of massive TV deals, massive sponsorship, and ultimately most clubs' revenue comes through the gate. And so, like, if you're given a typical example of, if I was to compare it, we'd say if it was a Cork City game behind closed doors and your average crowd was 3,000, if you're looking at it from that point of view, they would need to come out with, I suppose, in the region of probably getting a check for around 40,000 per home game if it was behind closed doors, for them, you know, to get back what they'd lose on if people were allowed to attend. And like, there's not only the crowd, there's the, you know, the merchandise you sell, you know, the chippers, the coffee shops, all within the ground that all those people that make their money on the night and they pay you for being inside the ground. And there's also as well, Jamie, the sponsors, you know, who, you know, they're sponsoring because they expect people to go to your games. And then on live streaming, what uptake will you have? Because obviously the main European leagues certainly look like they're going to go streaming. And then, you know, will you be streaming and competing against big matches between Liverpool and United or whatever? And it's how many people will stream. So I can see that everyone is, you know, everyone wants to get the players back because it's their full-time employment. But I just think physically it's really going to be a difficult task. And unless clubs or unless the new FAI board can get funding that clubs can get significant money for doing this, I really can't see how it's going to be a runner. Forget all the other stuff like the contact and all that, but just being from a pure financial point of view, how it would work. So, but look, there's a lot of discussions, a lot of options. Maybe something will develop. But personally, myself, I think we're 4 months, 5 months away from even starting the league. I think September is probably our best date at the minute. And even at that, we might even make that.
And John, what has been interesting is that the FAI, in fairness to them, with the new people involved, they have been doing interviews. They have been releasing more statements and speaking to clubs and having clubs and the PFAI and people involved in discussions, which wasn't always the case. So even though they're trying to deal with a very difficult scenario at the moment, we would hope moving forward that that can be a positive, that the clubs and the people who know a lot about this league are actually being asked their opinion about it.
Absolutely. I suppose that's the brilliant breath of fresh air about our league, that, you know, I've been involved in the league over 40 years and this is really the first time there's been engagement. You know, so that's fantastic, and fair play to the you know, the new people involved, Gary Owens, Roy Barrett, Noel Quinn, because ultimately that's the only way we're going to move the league forward. And I think it actually was very refreshing, Jamie, to hear Gary Owens last week or 2 weeks ago say that our facilities in our league are the worst in Europe, because, you know, we needed someone to come out and say, because these are the issues we have to deal with, and we need to improve our game, our stadium, and you know, and change the whole image and perception of our game. And obviously, you know, they're talking about money coming into our league. So there's loads and loads and lots of work to be done. But let's not be, you know, foolish and think that everything is okay. Like, we have a number of grounds in our Premier Division. Even when you go back to talking about playing games behind closed doors, we have at least 3-4 grounds in our at the moment where the dressing rooms are unsuitable to talk out in. They're antiquated. They're, you know, they're from 40, 50 years ago. So even when I was in charge of Cork City, we were talking out in the hotels when we used to go to these grounds. So even from a social distancing point of view, it's impossible. But look, I think the main thing is there is engagement. There seems to be a willingness now to try and see, can we move the league forward that over the next maybe 2, 3, 4 years and get it to a new position. And everyone needs to lift everyone with the clubs, the FAI, the whole lot of us, but at least it's fresh that there's communication and everyone is trying to do the right thing. And just let's hope that at the end, you know, it's constructive, come out with actions as opposed to just talking.
And as well, you know, we have seen, you know, different debates about a possible All-Ireland League and about the FAI inviting other people, the likes of someone like maybe a Brian Kerr or even yourself, John, to contribute, to be involved, you know, as a consultant or maybe actually work for the league in some sort of capacity. Is that something that would interest you in the future? You know, you've been very open with ideas about playing games on Thursdays for TV and all these type of things. You've been involved in the league, as you mentioned, for 40 years. I'm not sure if you have an ambition to managing the league again, but would working, you know, in the league in some sort of role interest you?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, to anyone that's ever been involved in full-time football, and thankfully for me, you know, when I took over Cork City as a manager, that was my first time ever being a professional full, that I relied on the football to pay my wages. And yeah, you love being involved, and who wouldn't want to be involved in football? So we wait and see what develops on that. An All-Ireland League, Jamie, personally, I think would be a good for us. I think there are lots of positives around it. And I do feel that ultimately it will be the way to go. There's lots of scenarios where, you know, the top four in each league will meet up and whatever. And there's lots of good proposals there. But certainly, I definitely think going forward, it's something that, you know, will happen. And we need it. We'll need it to happen. You know, ultimately, you know, if you look at the state of where we're at and the fact that in the 2000s we switched to summer football, we did that because we wanted our teams in Europe to progress our, and, you know, certainly there has been a certain amount of progression. But if you look at the likes of countries like, you know, Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, all these countries, they're all of a sudden have caught up with us, you know, whereas maybe 10 years ago they weren't at our level. And all of a sudden, you know, you're looking that we're not moving forward, we're moving back. And ultimately, you know, we have just to make sure that we can create an industry. I've been, I suppose, on record, Jamie, saying that I don't believe we can have 19 or 20 League of Ireland clubs. I think it's not feasible, and that we are going to be closer to maybe 12, 14 maximum if we're really going to drive the league on and have an industry over here. And an industry means, you know, clubs being run in a business fashion and having money.
John, our podcast is called League of Ireland Lives, and for the last 6 weeks I've been speaking to different people about their life in the League of Ireland. And you mentioned you're involved in it 40 years. You started as a player, of course, and a short spell with Athlone. You joined your, I suppose, how would I describe Cork City to you, John? Your boyhood club, the club you loved in 1986?
Yeah, I think you know, I suppose if you wanted to, I suppose my boyhood club when I was growing up, I was you know, supporting Athlone, but, you know, ultimately, you know, Cork City is my club and was my club because, you know, I played all my life there virtually as a senior player. And then when I finished playing, I was on the terraces or in the stands supporting for 10 or 12 years until I took over as manager. So obviously, you know, Cork City would be the club that would be closest to me. So that's probably the best way to put it, Jamie.
Yeah, so you played there till 2001, all-time top appearance maker, over 450 games. Are you still joint top scorer with Pat Morley? I think you are.
Yeah. I carried Pat there for a long time. Yeah, yeah, it's good. You know, I suppose, you know, the brilliant thing about playing is that, and people look at records, and to be honest with you, when I first started in League of Ireland, I was a long way off the pace. I wasn't, you know, near the level, and I was young for like maybe 21 coming through, and it took me a while to adapt to the physicality, and the tackling was a lot more dangerous, Jamie, a lot more serious than it is now. And but, you know, I just loved it. I enjoyed it. You know, I joined the club as a defender, played in defence all my life, which is ironic that I ended up in a forward position. And I suppose that I played with probably one of the great strikers in the league, Pat Morley, and we ended up having a very good combination. And, you know, so, yeah, so it was, you know, great times. And, you know, when you look back in the league, you know, at that, you know, over my career, and you look at the amount of times we played in Europe and European football and stuff like that, we can go into that, but it was, you know, they were the real highs of, you know, outside of winning the league or winning the cup, playing in Europe was incredible because it was like going into a different world. You're playing professional players and who really are at a higher level than you are. And so it was a fantastic experience.
Yeah, and then when you finished playing, you were also doing some coaching towards the end with the West Cork Schoolboys. 8 years at Avondale United. You were with UCC for a couple of seasons too, running their Munster Senior League team and the college team, and then Cork City for 2013 to 2019, John. We'll talk about all that, but I want to roll back to your first League of Ireland memory, even before you were playing when you were a kid or when you started playing. What's the first thing you remember about the League of Ireland?
Yeah, I think, you know, and you know, I've been on record as saying this. I attended the Athlone AC Milan game in 1975. I was 10 years of age. I asked my dad to bring me in, and my dad wouldn't have been really, you know, that strong into soccer. But I was living about 10, 12 miles from Athlone, and we went into that game. And all I remember was that absolutely packed St. Mel's Park. There was no stands in those days, Jamie. Everyone was standing up. But, you know, you were close to the wall. And as a young fella, you could see all the action. And the pitch was like a bog. And, you know, while TV football was really only coming in at that stage, you know, AC Milan were still recognised as a worldwide team. And it was a fantastic afternoon. Athlone drew nil all, missed the penalty. You know, and could have been one of the great but they could have won the match. And so that was one of my first outings. And, you know, from then, I always had a bug for League of Ireland. I attended school in Summerhill College in Sligo. So I would have a lot of close connections with Sligo Rovers, because I would have gone to Sligo Rovers every second Sunday when I was living in Sligo. And, you know, so I remember Sligo winning the league in 77, and, you know, the passion in that town and that county. And so I suppose I was a bit, as people often say to me, you're a bit of a crossover between an Athlone town Sligo Rovers guy. But, you know, League of Ireland was in my blood, and I attended, you know, League of Ireland matches ever since I was, you know, 10, 11 years of age.
And for some of the younger people watching and listening, John, who will remember you in your suit on the sideline as the Cork City manager, you won a league with Cork as a player, you won an FAI Cup, you won three League Cups as well, and that was where you spent the majority of your career as a player. And we're going to talk about it in more depth, but overall, how would you sum up your experience as a League of Ireland player, particularly at Cork City with those over 450 games and all the success that you had?
Yeah, I suppose it was a roller coaster as a player. The one thing I would say, Jamie, is that I was quite lucky in the sense that I didn't get any real serious injury. You know, you see lads and they break their legs and they get cruciate injuries. I avoided, you know, obviously I picked up a few knocks and that, but I didn't get any serious injury. And I suppose at the time, if you look at it, in the league, you were averaging about 33 games. Hopefully, if you got runs in the Cup, League Cup, FAI Cup, or even Europe, you know, so you're ending up with 45, 50 matches. And we were part-time players. You know, if you think of it, like in Cork, and, you know, we were all sort of working 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, all training 3 nights a week, training on a Saturday morning, and then you were playing on Sundays. And we were in the winter season like England. And so it was absolutely fantastic time, brilliant friendships. But the most important thing was that, you know, the league was a very tough league. And, you know, it's gone, you know, we were starting off in the era where it was very, very physical. And as towards the end of my career, it became less physical, you know, but, you know, tackling from behind was allowed. Giving fellas elbows in the head was allowed. And certainly, you know, I've met many defenders since where we've had many a laugh and joke who kicked me up and down the park. But, you know, it was just, you know, grounds were heavier and the facilities weren't as good. And, you know, and I suppose, you know, even in Cork, our training facilities weren't great at the time either. So, but we loved it. You know, we never complained. If you see the footage of some of the old games, you see the amount of how heavy the pitches were. But that was just the way it was. And so we loved it. And, you know, we had success along the way. You know, and sometimes, you know, I always think when you look back and you think, oh, Jesus, should we have won that? Should we have won this? And sometimes you don't realise, well, maybe the year you won it, you were lucky to win it, you know. But yeah, you know, great memories.
Yeah, and I was having a look this morning on Sportsfile, John. I just was looking for some images to use as part of the video, and I put up a tweet this morning asking if any, you know, fans had questions to ask and stuff. And lots of the photos are of you in Talla Stadium or in Richmond Park or in Turner's Cross before the match, walking the pitch with the players, checking things out. And the pitches in summer football now in top nick, and you know your stadium in Turner's Cross was one of those. Roll back to your playing career, and I know it was the norm because most pitches were like that, but how did you guys actually play football on those pitches?
But you know what I think it was, Jamie, it didn't, you know, there you deal with the conditions at the time, and in our lifetime that's the way it was, you know. And and I suppose, you know, the game has developed and has changed as well. And in my time, a lot of teams would have played 4-4-2. You'd have always played with two strikers. You know, probably a bit more direct. You know, in every era, there was brilliant players. I often, you know, even last week, I was asked to do my best 11 over the last 30 years, which is an impossible task. But it's a bit like they've always been brilliant players. You know, the difference nowadays, and particularly in the last 15, 20 years, is the strength and conditioning, the diet and nutrition in particular. You know, whereas in our day, you know, basically having salads was unheard of. You know, you were going to games and you were eating steak or you were eating chops and you were having chips, and, you know, that's just the way it was. But, you know, everything has gone to the better from that regard. But still at the same time, you know, if you look when I first started, our panel was 15 players, and that was for your season. So you think of it nowadays, how would you get, how would, how would 15 players survive? But that was it. And people were, I look back and I'm saying, guys were playing when they were injured, but I don't think they actually realized they were injured. It was just a different time. But the conditions were, you ended up like everything else. The start of the season, pitches were good. And by the time you got around to April and May, they weren't too bad. And you ended up in the middle of the winter when things were heavy and you just got on with it. But still, when you're looking back on it, Jamie, Milltown was still a very good pitch. Talca was good. Dalymount wasn't. So even though it was winter football, a lot of the pitches weren't too bad. And but yes, certainly, it was just you just dealt with the conditions and the way they were, you know.
What comes to mind, John, when you think back to some of the big matches that you guys would have played then, whether that be in the league run in 92-93, the FAI Cup in 97-98, and there was three league cups in that period as well. And, you know, in this day and age in the league that I remember, really, it was yourselves and Dundalk for years, and now it's Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers, and before that it was Shells and Bows and so on. Back then when you were playing, what do you remember about the big rivals and the big matches you were playing?
Yeah, I suppose no different. You know, clubs had different spells. When I first started in 86, Rovers were coming to the end of their three doubles in a row, an incredible team. But Derry then, took over, and Jim McLaughlin left Shamrock Rovers and he went to Derry, and Derry had joined our league, and financially they had lots of money at the time, and they brought half the Shamrock Rovers team up to Derry, and they took over, and Derry won the treble in 1989, and they were a dominant team. And then you went into the 90s, and you had spells of we were consistently always there challenging. So were Shells and Pats. Then Brian Kerr had revived Pats, and towards the end of the late 90s, then there was Pat Dolan, Liam Buckley. So Pats were very strong throughout the 90s, and but also Bows were, everyone had a bit of a patch, a good patch, as they say, Jamie. So it was one of those ones where if you look at the winners in throughout the 90s, I think Pats were the ones who dominated over the 10 or 12 years, but everyone else had won a title. I think Bows had won one, Dundalk, Derry, ourselves, and that was just the way it was. So there wasn't, other than Pats, everyone else was sort of, they all had certain periods when they did well. But I suppose the big thing at the time is that while you had a certain amount of movement around some of the Dublin clubs, like if you looked at probably Cork City, we nearly had a team that had been together for probably 8 or 9 years. So had Sligo, teams like that, possibly Galway. But what you ended up having is that probably the top players like Paul Doolan's, Pat Fenlon's, they had moved around a couple of clubs, and ultimately they brought a bit of success where they had gone to. But it was a good time, and it was a tough time, and the league was very, very competitive, no different than it is now, but Pats were probably the standout team over a longer period,
And you spoke earlier about your European memories as well, John, and again about a lot of the league would have been part-time players, and you were working full-time, certainly, and a lot of your Cork teammates were. What type of stories are in your head? And I'm sure when you're getting to have a chat with the lads in the pub, when the pubs reopen, or, the kids, or I'm not sure if you have grandchildren yet, like, what will you tell them about those European games?
Yeah, well, I think, from what I remember, Jamie, my memory isn't too bad, but Most of the League of Ireland clubs were part-time that time. I don't really think, there was a few guys that might have been full-time, but in terms of, was there an actual club where you'd have 14 or 15 players full-time at that time? I don't think there was. Everyone was really working, so we were really part-time players, training three nights a week, training on a Saturday morning and playing on Sunday. That was the general rule for most clubs. And when you got to Europe, and if you look at it compared to nowadays, that time, the old USSR was one country, where it's split up into at least six or seven countries since, Ukraine, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Georgia, Yugoslavia was one country. So the number of teams in Europe was much smaller, and there was no seeding. There was open draws. So for clubs in Ireland, the chances of drawing some of the big lads was massive, And like, if you look from our point of view, my first experience in Europe was we played in Moscow in 1989. behind the Iron Curtain. 6 months later, you know, the country, the wall had come down, and it was open plan. And that started happening across Europe in 91, 92, 93. But like, we drew Bayern Munich in 91. You couldn't draw Bayern Munich now unless you got to the qualifying group stages, you know. And like, that was an incredible draw, playing in the Olympic Stadium. You know, Stefan Effenberg, who was their top player, who later won a Champions League medal in 99, won a World Cup with Germany. You know, he was the big noise at the time. So for us to play a team like that, and then a number of years later, in 94, we played a team called Slavia Prague, and the Czech Republic, and you know, no one knew much about them. But Slavia Prague had Gladior Smrser, who played with Liverpool, Patrick Berger, who played with Liverpool.
Yeah.
And they had these type of players that no one had heard of, but only afterwards they turned into European stars, you know. And I remember they gave us a right hacking. They hammered us 4-0 in Cork, and they were superb. But we also had played Galatasaray in Turkey, probably the most hostile venue we'd ever been in. So, you know, if you go back over the years, Jamie, like, I was involved in 22 European ties. I was a part-time player, and you're going away for three or four days to these countries, and you were living the dream. But ultimately, on the majority of occasions, you're playing teams that were superior than you. They were professional players. They were, they all seemed to be 6'3", 6'4" athletes.
Yeah.
Pace, but it was just great experience. It was, you know, for us, it was a bit like our holiday. It was your time of the year when you got into Europe and you went away to enjoy your 3 or 4 days, give it your best crack. But on most occasions, you were out of your depth, and even scoring in Europe was difficult at times because you were playing teams that were much better than you. But look at them, they were great memories.
I'm doing it. Another podcast, John, called Ireland Away From Home, and talking to different Irish footballers or coaches who are away from Ireland. And last week I had James Chambers, Owen Weiran and Jordan Doherty on, and they're all in the States, and I was asking them about some of their away games in the States, and you know, the best place they've been to that they never thought they'd be in their life. Across those European matches and stuff, you mentioned about the USSR and stuff, is there a place that stands out to you that you'll always remember that you went there to play a football match?
Well, I think, you know, I was lucky in the sense that, you know, I was in Switzerland, I was in Israel, obviously Germany, Czech Republic, we were in Ukraine, Latvia, you know, so we've travelled to a lot of places. But I think the standout one had to be Galatasaray in Turkey, in Istanbul, because at the time in international football, Turkey were just beginning to come. You know, they'd been seen as sort of an easy touch, and in international football, they were used to getting beaten 3-4-0, and they were just beginning to turn the corner. And the hostility and the intensity of their supporters, the atmosphere in the city on the day, in the ground, the hostility, it was just incredible. And we lost 2-1 out in Galatasaray in a game possibly that Phil Harrington, probably if Man United had been out watching him that day, they'd have potentially signed him. He was absolutely incredible, because we should have got beaten by more. And when they came back to Cork, they beat us 1-0 with a late goal, and it was probably in Bishopstown in a very mucky pitch, which certainly they weren't used to, and we were. And it was a real occasion when we nearly caught them. But they ended up with about 6 or 7 Turkish internationals, and in the next round of that competition, they drew Man United. And while many people wouldn't realise that we played them in the round earlier, it was the year they knocked United out 3-3 on away goals, and the year when Eric Cantona, if you can remember, got sent off, and he was in the skirmish with some soldiers going down the steps. So that was the next round. So it was, you know, we always had the joke amongst ourselves was that, you know, United were lucky that we didn't get through, otherwise we'd have knocked them out, you know. But it was probably the most intimidating place to play in, and the atmosphere and the crowd of the night we played them was 35,000. So while Bayern Munich and all the other places were brilliant, Galatasaray was definitely the real standout European tie for me anyway.
And I know, John, we're kind of 20 years on almost to when you finished playing, and football in terms of what the players have has changed massively. With, you mentioned nutrition and, you know, S&C and GPS and video analysis and masseuses and extra physios and everything really. Is it possible to compare the actual football matches on the pitch, some of the big matches you would have played in or seen in your time, and some of the big matches that you've managed in, you know, in the League of Ireland? Are the matches, are the games, are the players the same?
Well, I think the difference, Jimmy, as well nowadays, the coaching is much higher standard, and that's not saying that in our time that there weren't very good coaches or it was just different. In the sense that, I suppose, if you think of it, like we were part-time, when you trained three times during the week, a lot of your training was based on fitness, and a lot of it was playing off the cuff to an extent, and you had your shape and your manager would have worked on that. But in terms of, you know, nowadays where, you know, you're working so much on rotation and movement from whether it be in defence or midfield or up front, there's a lot more coaching and I suppose a lot more in lots of ways. People may say over coaching, but certainly there's a lot more probably game intelligence now. And, you know, I think when we played, it was certainly more individualistic, if you call it. Like, if you think, you know, one of the best players I ever played with was Patsy Frey. And, you know, you think of guys like Tony Sheridan. You know, these guys were, you know, were real flair players, and they played off the cuff. And I suppose, I would think, now maybe I'm wrong, maybe if I met Brian Kerr, Brian might tell me that he was coaching Pats every day of the week, and possibly he was. But I would say, from my point of view, from Cork's, certainly, you know, we wouldn't have done as much coaching as that would have been done now. Certainly no S&C, certainly no diet and nutrition. So, but at the same time, there were brilliant players, Jamie, that, you know, if you had an Eddie Gormley in the current climate, would he be a brilliant player? Absolutely. He'd be in the top teens because he was a fantastic player. And so were many, many, many others. So it's just that, you know, sometimes when people look at football nowadays, they automatically assume that the players now are better. Certainly they're better prepared. It's a different lifestyle, but at the same time, as I always say, in every decade or you go through, and you know, even when I was starting off as a young fella following League of Ireland, you know, people remind me about Cork, Hibs, Cork Celtic, and those players. I didn't see them, but you know, from any bit of footage I've seen of them, you could see that they were tremendous players. And so it's just different era, different times, and I suppose it's like everything else, Jamie. You know, a lot of the new followers in our game, you know, who have started following League of Ireland, you know, we say in the last 20 years, who have been used to summer football, it's probably hard for them to imagine that when we used to play in the winter football. But at the same time, you know, it's just different. It's hard. Like, you can't compare the game now to the game then. All you can say is that the players then, they were brilliant players in the same, and the players in any decade, you know, top players will get it any team in any decade, and that's just the way it is.
When did you first start to want to be a coach, John, and a manager, and when did you realise that that could be an ambition for you to go right to the top of the game in this country, which you did?
Well, I suppose I was always passionate about soccer, and I always loved the game, and you know, I played other sports as well, and you know, I suppose when the big thing for players is that, whether you're full-time or part-time, the biggest thing is when you come to the end of your career, it's a tough gig because you're so used to, probably for the best part of 15, 20 years, preparing, you know, training all week, preparing for the matches, your mindset. And in lots of ways, it's the number one thing in your head, your job, your family nearly second, because you just live for the game and live to play. And you see a lot of players that when they come to the end of their career, some of them going to golf, some of them going to, you know, triathlons. But it is a difficult, because it's trying to fill the void when you were so intense for so many years. For me, I was always interested in coaching, and towards the end of my career, Brian Kerr and Noel O'Reilly, they were head of the coaching through the FEI. So, and I was always keen on that, and I just went into it in the early 2000s, and I started really coaching schoolboy teams and down where I live. And, you know, it was, I just got a great kick out of it. And from there, I went into amateur football, obviously with Avondale, who were a men's team, and turned into a very successful amateur team, and went on to UCC, who were the student team. And, you know, so it was, for me, it was great learning, you know, making your mistakes, how to deal with them, dealing with people, you know, where when you deal with problems. And so for me, it was a brilliant learning experience. And, you know, so I often look at the moment when I see players going straight from playing into managing a League of Ireland, I often wonder, you know, how they'll deal with their mistakes, you know, so quickly. Because certainly if I had been Cork City manager in the mid-2000s, I wouldn't have lasted 6, 12 months, 18 months, because, you know, I learned so much in non-league from different issues and problems and dealing with people. And that's the main thing, dealing with people. And that's what helped me when I eventually got up to Cork City.
Yeah, John, anytime someone mentions Noel O'Reilly, I try and tell this quick story. I was on his last ever youth cert in 2007, 2008 in the Oscar Trainer Centre in Dublin, and he died shortly afterwards. And his nephew Dara was my assistant at St. Pat's 17 for a couple of years, and I know it was his brother Kieran. But anyway, on the first day of the coaching course, he gave us all a strip of newspaper and he said, make a hat. So we all made this paper hat and we're all looking around laughing and going, what's going on here? He said, put the hat on. So we all put the paper hats on, about 20 of us in this room. And he said, that's your coach's hat. He said, you're now not a parent or a volunteer or an ex-player. You're now a coach. And I'll always remember that story. And he's been such a massive loss to Irish football, but he has shaped so many coaches and managers like yourself through the years. And, you know, I just love telling that story. It's so simple. Put your coach's hat on and be a coach.
It's incredible. And it was, and you look at Brian and Noel at that particular time, they were so opposite. Brian was very intense, brilliant coach, brilliant organiser. And Noel then was so laid back. You know what I mean? And it wasn't that he was laid back in the way that you think that he wasn't interested. It was just his manner. He was so cool. And they were a brilliant partnership. And Noel, I could tell you a funny story that when Ireland won the Euros in the under-18s and under-16s that particular year, and Brian and Noel were involved, they came to West Cork a number of months later. And the West Cork League, through myself, we had a coaching session for all these kids. Noel and Brian would come in with the two trophies, and all the kids would get their photographs taken. They were all about 14 years of age, whatever. And on the day they came down to West Cork, it was absolutely lashing rain. And we had 96 kids, and myself and Liam Murphy, who was involved with Cork City at the time, and a couple of local coaches from West Cork, I was going, how are we going to work this out? And Noel and Brian will lose the head, and, you know, 96 kids, and what are we going to do? They're here to get for a coaching session, or here to get their photograph taken afterwards with the cups and whatever. And I'll always remember, it was absolutely lashing. And Noel and Brian arrived, and I was over more or less trying to apologise about the weather. And what could you do? And the two lads got out of the car, and they were just going, this is fantastic. All they could see was a green field, loads of muck, and 96 kids ready to go. And they just said, okay. And in the space of 2 or 3 minutes, they were saying, okay, we'll split them into groups of 8-12s. We'll all take a group, we'll rotate them after 4 or 5 minutes. And we did an hour session. The kids were buzzing. Everyone was saturated. And Noel and Brian were just brought out the trophies. The kids got their photographs taken. But it was just so, you know, I suppose the way they were, Jamie, and why, you know, there was never a problem. This was ideal. It was brilliant to be down in the middle of the country and see this. And, you know, it was just great. And the amount of kids even here who are now in their late 30s and early 40s that I've met since, who often remarked to me about that particular day, and Brian and Noel be down there. So yeah, Noel was a tremendous loss, and but it was just a funny story from West Cork.
Yeah, great story. John, I've about 12 questions that I want to ask you about you as Cork manager, and we've got about 20 minutes left, so I'm not going to get through all 12. I'm hoping you might answer a few of them in your opening answer about your time in Cork. Two FAI Cups, the league, European trips, massive crowds at Turner's Cross, players like Shawnee Maguire just brilliant, brilliant signings that, you know, wasn't even getting on the bench with Dundalk. You signed him and look what he did. Sum up for me, if you can, in your first answer, your 5-6 years with the Rebel Army as the manager.
It was just, for me, it was... it was just a dream. Look at Jeremy, people use words. It was just, I suppose, if you look at it, I was the best part of 25 years working Monday to Friday and playing football in the other weekends, call it that way. And then to give up my day job and the Cork City became my day job and they were going to pay me a wage that was going to cover my bills. And I was going in every morning in a tracksuit at 7 o'clock. And coming home whenever, Jamie, you know, whether it was 6 in the evening, 7 in the evening, whether I go on to a youth match, go to youth training, whether I was up the country watching another team play, I gave 24/7. So did my management staff. And it was just an absolutely incredible roller coaster. And for us to be up competing like we were from the very first season, it was hard to imagine. And the crowds and the support I got, Jamie, was phenomenal. You know, the first season, crowds of 5,000-6,000 people straight away, when crowds had been down to less than, you know, 1,100 people, 1,200 people previously. So it was just, I suppose, it was just a roller coaster. And even though there was stress and there was pressure, you know, I just loved it. And, you know, there was nothing about my time there that I have to say I didn't like, Jamie. It was just, you know, and I understand, you know, and people say afterwards, you know, losing cup finals or... maybe, you know, in the end, when you left the club and the results hadn't gone, there was nothing I could say that bad there. It's just a brilliant occasion for me, and I loved every minute of it. That's the truth, Jamie.
How quickly after you'd taken over did you realise how big it was going to get? You spoke about the crowds straight away. You started to compete to try to win the league. The number of FAI Cup finals in a row you were in, you won two, you lost a couple. You were yourselves and Dundalk were shooting it out for the league every year. Even I think The first season where you were there, did the league go to the last day, won the last days in Oriel Park and Dundalk just beat you guys. But when did you realise that you were going to be able to build what you did in the end?
To be honest with you, when the day I was appointed, I had rang John Cotter to see would he come in as assistant. This was the middle of November. I was still in my day job up to the end of December. I officially wasn't going to be employed by the club until January, but obviously, you know, there was things to be done. And I appointed my backroom team very quickly, ex-teammates of mine. Billy Woods had been there. John, I had asked John to come involved, Phil Harrington to come involved, and then Lisa Fallon followed on afterwards. And basically, there were 6 players signed by the club. The club hadn't finished in the top half of the table for the previous 2 seasons. Tommy Dunn had been the previous manager. Tommy had done really well in bringing the club up to the Premier Division, but he had found it difficult because in Cork the expectations were high and people thought when the club got into the Premier Division we'd be up challenging the top, and we weren't. And ultimately in those 2 years Tommy was there, he found it difficult to get a goal scorer, and when you don't have someone that's going to get your goals, you're not going to win matches, you know. And so when I took over, Daryl Horgan had left. Daryl was leaving to go to Dundalk. Shane Duggan was leaving to go to Limerick. So we had 6 players signed, and of the 6 there was Johnny Dunleavy, Mark McNulty, a few of the Cork lads, and that was it. And so I never thought, Jamie, that we'd have been competing for the league on the last day of the season by any imagination. What I was planning to do was that I knew there was a number of players in the non-league, in the Munster Senior League, who, the likes of the Mark O'Sullivans, who I had in Avondale, that I felt would do a job for us. And really, our plan was to get a team together that would be competitive, would have passion, and that would bring the supporters back. Because if they saw there was a team fighting in Cork and that Turner's Cross became a difficult place to be for the opposition, we knew then... And I knew that people would come back in. But certainly, there's no way that, if you asked me at the start of the season, that we'd have been competing at the end at the last game of the season against Dundalk. That was never. I never saw that happening. But as the season developed, Jamie, and I think, particularly in my first season, I certainly think clubs probably underestimated us. And, you know, and probably thought then, there was a period, I remember, after about 13, 14 matches. We lost a couple of games on the bounce, and people were saying, oh, Cork are gone now. You know, we were about second at the time or third at the time, and people said, well, Cork are gone now because we lost a couple of games. But we came back, and that season, we won an incredible amount of games at home, 1-0, with late winners. And then we got to the last game of the season against Dundalk, and it was funny. It was Stephen had revived Dundalk, and he was with them. This was his second year, and he got them going. The previous year, they'd come second to Pats, and we were there in our first year, and it was it was incredible to go to Oriel to have a chance of winning the league. But there was no way, Jimmy, that I thought that would have happened. You know, I suppose it propelled us from nowhere straight to the last game of the season. And all of a sudden, I suppose if you look at my time in Cork, that's why the expectations were so high, because we were at the top very quickly. And a fantastic occasion. And on the night, we lost 2-0 in Dundalk, and Dundalk just a bit better than us. But there wasn't much in it in the first year.
Yeah, I first started properly covering the league, John, in 2015, started our League of Ireland podcast and also on the radio show and doing live games and stuff with my boss in work. I'd sadly passed away, Johnny Lyons, in August 2015. So I went from being his producer to presenting the stuff. So I was at a lot of the Cork Dundalk games in Dundalk. I was at a couple in Cork, and I was doing the podcast, interviewing people every week. And like that time for me to be someone talking about the matches and talking about you against Stephen Kenny and talking about the top players in both groups and the cup finals in the leagues and stuff. For me, I loved it. For you to be involved in it and that battle with Dundalk, and it was Cork and Dundalk, that was it. It really was Cork and Dundalk for that few years. What was that like to actually be involved in and, you know, playing them 5-6 times a season, playing them in 4 or 5 cup finals in a row and trying your best to try and get the better of the now senior Ireland manager, of course?
Yeah, and that's the way it just developed, Jimmy. Like, if you look at it, like Liam Buckley was after winning the league with Pats in 2013, and everyone thought with that team that Pats would kick on, and it didn't. It was funny that Dundalk and Cork came, and Pats dropped away, and that team began to split up, and then with Sean McGrove was obviously Pat Finlan had been there, and Trevor for a little while, Trevor Carley, and then Stephen came in, so there had been a bit of change there. But at the same time, Bowes, Derry were all strong clubs. It was just that Dundalk and ourselves just seemed to go to a different level and, you know, a different intensity. And they were just magical games. In the early years, Dundalk seemed to beat us quite a bit. Then the next period, we seemed to have the monkey over them. And then it began to balance itself out. But it was, there were great occasions, because every game was, like, if it was in Cork, it was a 7,000 sellout. You know, if it was on Dundalk, it was a 4,500 sellout. The games were always on TV. So there was massive, you know, interest in those matches, because I suppose people could see that the winner of those games probably was going to win the league. And even between both teams, while there was huge rivalry between the teams, there was also tremendous respect, because everyone knew there wasn't, you know, a lot between the teams in terms of, you know, you look at us in 2015, When Dundalk won the double, Richie Towell got the win in the cup final after extra time. Dundalk were a better team than us that year. They won the double, and they were, I mean, when they were better, Jimmy, we made a lot of changes at the end of 2015. We reshuffled the whole team, because we recognised that Dundalk had moved to a different level from 2014 to 2015, and our team, pace wise, energetic wise, wasn't at the level that they had gone to. In Europe, we'd lost a game out in Iceland after extra time, and we didn't have the legs that was needed, and a lot of our team were on the wrong end of 30, and so we decided at the end of that year that to have any hope of competing, we needed to start again. And I suppose in some ways, you know, people look back and, you know, some people say, God, wasn't it a big call to make, you know, because we got rid of about 7 or 8 players and we brought in new players. And then in 2016, when we came, we had a younger team, Dooley, Maguire, Bolger, Kenny Brown. So we were bringing in, you know, core players that were sort of, you know, mid-20s, and a different type of player. And then all of a sudden, I suppose from 2016, we had that patch between 2016, 2017, and our games between ourselves and Dundalk were neck and neck, and they were brilliant occasions. I know a lot is made about Stephen and myself, but I was doing the best I could for Cork, and he was doing the best he could for Dundalk, and it was just that we were you would have imagined there would have been other clubs that would have come in to compete at the time, but it just didn't happen, and I think the standard was so high between us, the other teams just couldn't, if you look at the points table, at times the third and fourth place teams were 20, 30 points behind, which was incredible, but it was just the way it was, and there were great occasions for us, you know.
And the story of the Cup Finals, John, and I don't agree with the viewpoint some have of, oh, it was the same teams for 4 years in a row. I thought it was great, and it just built the rivalry, and the fact that both clubs won two as well, and a little story at the 2015 final, which you guys lost. I was presenting FAI Stadium TV, and Sean Maguire wasn't even on the bench for Dundalk. And I remember standing in the tunnel at the Aviva during the warm-ups. I'd done a couple of bits, whatever. And he was in a suit, and he was getting ready. And we were chatting. I'd actually done a couple of sessions with him a couple of years before in a park when he came home from the UK. And he was so disappointed that he couldn't even make the bench for the Cup Final. And then roll a year on, and he's scoring the last-minute winner in the last minute of extra time, in the goal to the right of the Aviva as you look from the main stand, and you're running up the sideline with all your staff. And that story of him from a year before, literally devastated to on top of the world, and you being his manager then, that was just an amazing turnaround for him and an amazing story for you guys. And that moment when he scored that goal, you knew you'd won.
Yeah, and I suppose, Jamie, we needed a win. I often compare, if you look at the last season, even with Shamrock Rover and Stephen Bradley, you get to a point where your team needs to win because it brings out that extra confidence in you. And no doubt for us, you look at Shawnee, he wasn't in a good place. And to be fair to him, it wasn't that, at Dundalk, he wasn't even on the bench. I think it was a situation where, they had Dave McMillan, they had killed off. You had Daryl Horgan. They're fantastic players. Did Richie Towell. And Shawnee, was not in a good place from a football point of view. Things weren't bouncing right for him. He'd lost confidence in himself. And there was no guarantee either, Jamie, that when he came to me that things were going to change. But, that's why I suppose I always believe with any player, you try and work as well as you can with him. And some people will come out, you have to try and bring out their strengths. And for me, it just happened with Shawnee, and his ability came out and his confidence came out. And, the next year then for us, he was an incredible player. And that 2016 season was neck and neck. Ourselves and Dundalk were neck and neck. If you look at it, they were in the Europa League. That was the year they had a fantastic run. We also went to the third round of the Europa League that year. We beat Linfield. We beat BK Häcken in the second round from Sweden, and we ended up playing Genk in the third round, and a very good Genk team that four other players are in England at the moment in the Premier Division, but they knocked us out. But both teams of that year were very, 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 very even, and we went to a league game in Oriel, three games to go in the season, and there was a point between us, and Dundalk beat us 2-1. Daryl Horgan got two goals. And there was nothing in the match. And it was the title decider, And then a month later, we were in the Cup Final. And, again, there was nothing in the game. Both teams had chances. And Shawnee scores with the last key of the game. But it was a huge win for us, Jamie, because not only was it the Shawnee Maguire, because he had a very, very good season for us, it was just the fact that, he had scored, we'd won the Cup. And ultimately, it kicked us on for 2017. And that it lifted us, and there was no doubt after winning the Cup, you could see in 2017, even myself and the management staff, we could see that, the confidence the Cup had given us had really kicked us on for the next season. But look, it was a memorable game, and I suppose, if you were ever to score a goal against Dundalk, you wanted to be the last kick of the game so they couldn't come back at you. So it was a great day.
John, we've 5 minutes left because I know you've got an appointment, so three more quick questions if you can, please. The double season in 2017, the penalties against Dundalk in the final, Kieran Sadler scoring the winner. I had him on in the first episode of this, actually, and he was telling me about that and some of his Cork teammates and stuff. Winning the league by, I think it was 7 points. And again, that was the first league title in that battle with Dundalk. How do you remember that year?
Yeah, well, the main thing for that year was, I think, Jamie, that the first 22 games of the season, which was a 33 season league.
Yeah.
And the first 22 games of the season, we won 21-0-22. Yeah, it was just, and we were winning games. If you look at the score lines in our matches, yeah, we were winning games. We were scoring 3 goals, 4 goals. You know, that forward line of, you know, Dooley, Maguire, Shepherd was electric. You know, and then you had goals coming in from Morrissey and Buckley from midfield, but they were just electric. And the team was electric. And you know, to think that you'll go 22 games and you win the first 21 or 22 was incredible. And then, you know, like, I suppose, Jimmy, before the break that season, we played Dundalk. We'd already beaten them at home 1-0. And we played them in Oriel on the day before the mid-season break. And at the time, there was 12 points. Sorry, Jamie, it was 15 points difference. Like, it was incredible at the time. And Dundalk needed to win. And if they won it, obviously it brought it back to 12 and gave them a chance in the second half of the season. But we won 3-0, which was a phenomenal performance. And Maguire getting the hat-trick. And
yeah,
you're 18 points clear. And all I'm thinking about is, God, could the league end tomorrow? You know what I mean? You know, and then, you know, as it turned on, then Maguire was gone. Kevin O'Connor was gone. Johnny Dunleavy did his crew shit, who was our club captain. So we lost 3 of our starting 11 short after the 22nd game. And then for the run-in, we hadn't been playing as well, but we still got to the cup final. And there was a lot of talk that, you know, going into the cup final, which was unusual, that the league champions, we weren't favourites because we'd lost the lads. And it was a bit seen that we weren't free-flowing, which we weren't. You know, we hadn't scored the goals that we had in for the first two-thirds of the season. And so I think, you know, the cup final was intriguing. It was a real even match, I felt. And Dundalk scoring extra time. H. Campion equalises for us. One of the few goals he scored was, made himself a hero. And then when it went to penalty shootouts, but funny enough, we had been practicing penalties for a long time. Lisa Fallon had a strategy regarding penalties that she had found somewhere. And she was always practicing penalties with the lads after training. And when it came to the penalty shootout, we were very confident because we hadn't missed a penalty from 2016 all the way through to the end of 2017. Now, Shawnee had taken most of them, but still in saying that we were confident with Sadler. But you never know, Jamie. It's a penalty shootout. You need a McNulty to make a save, which he did. And then Sadler has the last kick of the game to win the double. You know, it was, you know, to be a kick of the ball away for Cork and soccer, who never won the double to win the double. It was a magic day for us.
Now, here's a weird coincidence, which I don't really believe in coincidences, but yeah. May the 1st, 2020 it is today when we're chatting. And I have the laptop here beside me, John, and I have my notes. But if ever someone says something I want to check, I'll just jump onto the internet. And you actually left the Cork City job 1 year ago today, the 1st of May 2019. And that's very coincidental because we're chatting today. And like exactly a year on now, what are your feelings about leaving the job? And I'm sure you've had time to think and reflect and talk to people and now watch the team with a different manager.
Yeah. And I suppose that the main thing, Jamie, it's that for the first 2 months, I suppose you're all over the place, you know, because you've been 24/7 for 5.5 years.
Yeah.
giving your life to this and you know, you're up at, as I said, you're in the training ground at 7 a.m. So you're wound up really. And but I think, you know, when you look at it, is that to have been at the club for so long, you know, which when I first started in 2013, I wouldn't have thought it would have been that long. And then, you know, I think 2018, you know, we had done reasonably well in 2018, but unfortunately we came second in the league. We got beaten in the cup final 2-1. And, you know, I think as well as that, because we were owned by the supporters club for us, and again, tremendous support, you know, it is tough running a club run by the supporters because financially, you know, it's League of Ireland drains the money and particularly for a country club and a provincial club, because every second week, you know, okay, even going to the likes of Waterford, it's still 2 hours down the road. You know, there's hotels, there's meals, you know, so a lot of our games are overnight. It's heavy costs outside of wages, you know, the running costs. And we got to a stage where we were probably maxed out. You know, financially, we were as maxed as we could be, unless we brought in outside investment. And my last season last year, we'd introduced a lot of new players, young players, and we hadn't started the season well. And, you know, I suppose, Jamie, because we've been doing so well and everyone expected success, which had been for the previous 5 years and been 5 years in Europe, you know, after the first third of the season, the results hadn't been good. And you know, I suppose the one thing I'd always said to the Cork City people and to the board, and there had been different boards, or to any club, even Avondale or UCC, was that, look, when your time comes or someone doesn't want you there, they feel they want to make a change, you know, I wasn't going to wait around. I was going to head off to West Cork, and that's what I did. But look, it was after coming out of it, and when things settled back down, and you look at all the brilliant times and the way things were, but it's just that it's high pressure, the stress. You know, the amount of people that have told me since, "Geez, you look different, you look better."
Yeah,
but still, you know, at the same time, Jamie, I never wanted any differently. It was a brilliant occasion, and you know, there was talk last November that I might have got involved with another club, and if that had happened, I would have gone back in. So as mad as we all think managers are and as stressed as they can be, you know, it's just in your system that you love the game, you love doing it. But, you know, for me, it's, you know, 12 months later, you know, brilliant occasions, fantastic support. And, you know, it's at the moment for the club, it's just a bit that they're Neil has come in, Neil Fenn, John Cotter had taken over. And I don't really think the board at the time really wanted John. And I think they felt they needed to make a change, but I'm not sure they really knew what they wanted to do or who they wanted to appoint at the time. And John came in for a number of months and really he had a very difficult time. You know, it was hard. He was asked to get rid of players and then they lost in Europe. You know what I mean? And when you're not in Europe or you're losing Europe, Jamie, that's where the money is. And Neil has come in and he's brought in a new team. And, you know, so it's going to be a tough challenge. And I suppose the only good thing for probably City at the moment is that the break has happened has probably suited, you know, because with the start, probably Neil has assessed the squad and probably realizes that he wants to change things around. And but look, Cork will come back because it's a brilliant club and brilliant support. And but for me, you know, I'm very relaxed, Jamie, and I can look back with great memories. And you know, I had a great staff and great management with me, and we work 24/7, and that's all you can do.
John, very lastly, because I know you've got to run. The future, I know you're writing a book about your time in Cork and your career and stuff. I know you worked for years and years and years as a sales rep for Diageo. And you're 55, so certainly if a job came up, you're still, I'm sure, ambitious to try and manage. So what does the future hold for JC?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I suppose, yeah, regarding the book, yeah, it's not finished. We're writing about, you know, the good times of Cork, and, you know, it'd be interesting, I'm sure, for a lot of Cork City people and maybe for a lot of League of Ireland lads as well, because, you know, while there are lots of books out there of different sports, you know, whether it's GA, soccer, whatever, there's very few League of Ireland books out there. So, you know, and you think about it, why shouldn't there be for, you know, League of Ireland people, League of Ireland books out there? And there should be a lot more, I believe, for players that are, you know, great players who played in the game and great managers and stuff. So so we'll see how that goes anyway, Jamie. But yeah, I suppose from a point of view, if the right opportunity comes up and I feel that, you know, that I suppose ultimately everyone wants success, Jamie. Everyone wants to be in Europe. It's not as simple as that. I know the way things worked out in Cork, you know, and being in Europe qualifying the first year. And you know, but when I took over Cork, they were in debt. There was huge problems, and we restructured the club and got things going. So, yeah, absolutely. If the right opportunity came up and to work with the right people, and there was a genuine owner or a genuine board of people who really wanted to push the club in the right way, and you know, it's not all about massive finances, but you certainly have to have a certain amount of finance to get things going and get structures right. And so if the right opportunity comes up, Jamie, absolutely. I'm certainly not finished with football, but at the same time, you know, if I met you in 10 years time and you said you didn't manage again, that's the way it is. That's the way it is. But I'm not getting wound up about it. If the opportunity happens, I'd certainly take it.
Well, fantastic stuff. And that's the voice there of John Caulfield. And I'll probably interview John 8 or 10 times a year for 5 years when he was Cork manager. And he was great with his time then and even better with his time now. Over an hour chatting. And we're late finished, John, because I know you've got to run. So thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of your break. And we'll see you in some capacity in football in the near future, hopefully.
Thank you, Jamie. Keep up the great work.
So that's it for episode 7 of League of Ireland Lives, and thanks so much to John Caulfield for giving me over an hour of his time on a Friday morning, a year to the day after leaving his job as Cork City manager. And fantastic, engaging stuff. He always speaks so well on football, and really enjoyed John's company over the last hour. If you liked the podcast and you want to let more people know and send it to them on either Spotify or Apple Podcasts or YouTube, I would appreciate that. And we will be back with episode 8 next week, folks. Have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.